So, hi everyone, it's Miss Martin and Miss Pearson here, and we're going to start talking to you about Russia. Today we're going to look at the Romanovs, and particularly where the problems started out for old Nicholas.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, hopefully you guys will enjoy this, and not think too low of us.
Okay, so we're going to start with, obviously, the 1905 revolution, just a bit before, obviously, our kind of course content starts. So the 1905 revolution takes place in 9th of January 1905, and essentially it is a march of 200,000 men led by a priest called Father Gapon, who essentially, what they want is they want political rights and an end to the war with Japan.
What you guys have got to remember is that during this time, Russia thought that when they went to war with Japan, that they were going to be able to beat them really easily. To the Tsar, it's more of a vanity thing. They could show off the power of Russia. However, it went the opposite way. They instead started to lose this war against Japan.
Yeah, like bear in mind that Japan is a very, very small country compared to Russia. So this defeat is very kind of humiliating for them. So essentially, they want to kind of leave the war with Japan, and essentially they just march to the Winter Palace and demand that the Tsar treats them all like human beings. They don't want anything radical. They go in unarmed, and the Tsar says disperse them, but obviously his men interpret that as let's go and kill as many as we can.
And what you need to know is that at the front of these people at the marches were innocent women and children. They actually pushed women and children to the front, I guess, as a way of saying, surely you won't kill us if we have the women and children in front of us. However, that didn't exactly work out for them.
No, so this whole peaceful affair turns into something very bloody, obviously giving the Tsar the nickname Bloody Nicholas.
Yeah, there was approximately about 200 people killed, roughly 800 wounded. This was an absolutely terrible affair for the Tsar, especially when you start to think of the consequences. This is an event that shocks the nation. It's caused a storm of protests across the country. They were really upset by this idea that innocent women and children were gunned down in cold blood, so to speak. And it kind of really affects the Tsar, especially how the people view him. Prior to this, there was this prestige of the royal family, this mystique about them. He was considered the father of the nation. By having the men open fire on the people, this arguably contributes to rising tensions and discontent towards the Tsar. We could argue that it changes the way the people view him, which, as we know, later manifests again during the revolutions of 1917. There were strikes, there were sackings following this event, and most importantly, the October Manifesto. So this is basically when the Tsar says, okay, I'll give you more freedom, I'll create a government, which we know as the Duma from your previous studies. As we know, the Duma doesn't exactly work out. This now brings us to the idea of Russia in early 1917, now that we know what the people think of the Tsar. What you need to know is, at this point in time, Nicholas has a large army. He also has a secret police called the Okhrana, there to help him maintain power. And as previously established, if you're able to have a military presence and military support, you kind of are more difficult to challenge by the people. The Russian parliament also at this time, who were created by Nicholas as a sort of appeasement to the people, they find it difficult to challenge the Tsar, and the workers also find it difficult to organise trade unions. So one could actually argue that during this point in time, the Tsar is looking reasonably strong.
To an extent, I think, Ms. Martin. Obviously, Russia is a very militaristic country, but this all derives essentially from its economic needs, and this militarism becomes an issue and essentially puts Russia into this cycle of poverty where they constantly want that conquest. The Tsar wants to be kind of that strong power, and it therefore leads to kind of a larger military establishment trying to grow, consequently impacting the productive forces of the country. and therefore leading back to that cycle of poverty and therefore that discontent within Russia. Okay, remember, Russia is a vast country built up of kind of many different kind of cultures and nationalities. The kind of geographical landscape itself, the kind of the land is going to have a massive impact on the ability for obviously the peasants to produce crops and things like that. So Russian society is a very multinational state, and this is going to have quite a big impact on the Tsar's ability to rule in itself, because he's got to manage all these different languages. So you've got Russian, you've got Ukrainian, you've got Yiddish, Finnish, German, Latvian, okay, just to name a few. And that's going to be very difficult for the Tsar to rule over, and especially given that landscape of Russia. He can only be in one place. Remember, industry, the Trans-Siberian Railway has only just been built, and access around the country is very, very difficult for him.
And that, I feel like, is a key point you can fully touch upon. I mean, as I said, he looks relatively strong, but that is merely a look. By the winter of 1916-17, his rule is basically under threat at this point. And in February 1917, as we know, he's overthrown. The royal family that's ruled Russia since the 17th century loses power and Russia becomes a republic. But first we need to break down and look at the reasons of why. So the first we can look at is the peasants. Now, the peasants, to sum up what problems they had with the Tsar, is simple in the fact of their houses lack running water and flushing toilets. Think of that in the early 20th century. Their modern farming equipment is basically unknown. It's very predated agricultural. A lot of it's by hand or using animals. They're illiterate and unskilled. Industry cannot develop unless you're able to firstly develop the classes. And there's also resentment during this period. So peasants actually wish to see wealthy landowners lose their lands. And there is a tradition of peasants uprising against those above them. So we've got to consider that this is a dangerous group. And also, if we look at the language that's being used, a peasant in itself is a pre-industrial agricultural labourer or a farmer with limited land ownership. Now, this especially, this word leads back to the Middle Ages, where feudalism and paying rent, tax, fees or services to a landlord was the way. You've got to think, we're still referring to them as peasants in the early 20th century, when the rest of Europe at this point in time had already gone past industrialization. So that kind of shows you just how far back Russia is in comparison to the rest of Europe.
Yeah, this very pre-capitalistic nature obviously has a massive impact on the industry. So remember, two-thirds of your population work in agriculture at this point. Obviously leaving a third for your industry, but that is not very developed, okay, because they do not have that ability to produce quickly. They don't have enough machinery. A lot of that gets imported, and most of kind of what they do is on farming.
Yeah, and when we talk about that, we can also remember that it wasn't just people like the peasants who had trouble, but also the town workers. This we've talked about with you guys quite a few times when we've looked at inference questions, for example. Give two things you can infer about workers' lives in the towns and cities during this period of time. Life for workers in the cities was very difficult. I mean, their living conditions were poor. Workers would live in overcrowded barracks or slums. Many Russian cities, where they had tried to industrialize so quickly to keep up with the rest of Europe, they'd done it at such a poor quality. They weren't able to ensure that the people's lives were good. The workers' houses were badly built. They were poor areas that were overcrowded. You've got to remember Petrograd, which is now St. Petersburg, which was the capital until 1918, almost tripled in size between 1881 and 1917. Moscow, which became the capital in 1918, more than doubled in size in the same time. That's quite a short period of time to be growing in that rate. And the Tsar's police are still making it difficult at this time for the workers. They can't form trade unions to campaign for better wages and conditions. And the soldiers often are sent to end strikes or put down any unrest amongst the workers. This means that even strikes about pay and conditions could easily turn into a confrontation between the workers and the Tsar. It kind of doesn't surprise you that when we look at what happens in February 1917, that a strike can lead to an overthrowing of a monarch, in the sense of even before this, they're struggling to get their views heard.
Yeah, and essentially, obviously, the peasants also suffer from very high taxes as well. And obviously, that's going to have a huge impact on their ability to kind of have a good standard of living. So this whole backwards economy is obviously going to push for further strikes, which we're going to see, obviously, with the February Revolution and so on. And all of this links back to the idea that the Tsar wants to be kind of that great power and expand kind of militaristically. And yeah.
I mean, however, I will add, even though we've identified the problem that the workers had, what you need to remember that it is a minority of people who live in these towns away from the great cities, as most of the country had no industry, as we said. It was 2/3 agricultural. But many Russian workers were employed in these large factories, which means if the workers protested, it would have little effect on the country as a whole, but could cause massive disruption in the capital. And what you need to remember is that at this period of time, we don't just have these problems piling up, but also World War One, which we will focus on in our next podcast.
Indeed.